Welcome back one and all to another day here at The Damage Report. I'm John Arola, and despite the fact that it's a Thursday, it is oddly friend-tastic up in here because we've got Fiorentini on a Thursday.
Fantastic Thursday. It's going good.
Thursday, which means maybe we'll get an appearance of the Tuxedo Chitty. That'd be cool.
Oh, I gotta go chase her down.
But anyway. Okay, but yeah, we didn't have a Monday show, which is your domain, but we don't want to rob you of your time or the audience of you. So thank you for joining us on a Thursday.
Oh my gosh, of course. Thank you for having me. Good to be here, everybody. What's up?
And you know, we don't often get a chance to reflect not only on the Bituation Room, but also on the Twituation Room. So what have you been up to recently?
Yesterday on the Twituation Room, in addition to doing some yoga, which I do every single time I stream on TYT's Twitch channel on Wednesdays, middle of the day, right before the main show, basically took us down like an entire rabbit hole of the amount of people who are quitting their jobs because they don't want to get paid nothing, to be disrespected by both the like customers and their managers. So if you're getting it from both ends, you're gonna say deuces and bye. And that was, you know, this week we saw like an entire franchise of Noah's Bagels in Vacaville, California just walk out on the job because they were completely disrespected by new management. Yeah. And so it's important to understand. Yeah, who's
bagels?
Taking care of the, oh, I'm sure they walked out with a few dozen.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. The fresh ones anyway. Okay, that's good. Then I'm okay with anti-work. As long as the bagels are considered. I don't want bagel erasure.
That's absolutely good.
Anyway, yes. So we've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the next hour and a half. Too much, honestly, let's keep it real. But one thing we have that we have not had in a very, very, very long time, I think way back to the before times, is a live Skype in guest. During the show, we're gonna be joined by two student activists who are right now engaged in a hunger strike for voting rights in DC. So it's gonna be very exciting. We'll be able to get their response to what happened last night as well. So stay tuned for that and for a whole bunch of other fun stuff, including the Freedom Phone. What is it and is it a massive scam? We'll reveal the answers to those questions and more later on. And along the way, if you don't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, you can send us messages, tweets, comments, super chats, all that, and we will respond. Also, early heads up, our tier 3 live Q&A is happening later on today, 12 p.m. Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Tier 3 members on YouTube, every month we just hang out and talk. Maybe I will reveal details of a potential secret project coming up soon on the tier 3 Q&A. And if you wanna leave some comments and topics of conversation and stuff, community tab has a post about that right now if you wanna go check that. But with that said, Francesca, are you ready to do this thing?
Yes.
Okay, it took a bit to get there, but I think we're ready. Okay, let's jump into this.
A setback for Democrats on Capitol Hill. What would have been their landmark voting rights bill failed 52-48 in the Senate last night, with two Democrats joining all 50 Republicans in opposing a rules change to push it through.
Okay, so Joe Manchin, Kirsten Sinema did the only thing they were ever going to do, what they knew they were going to do, they once again sided with the Republicans to stop any reform whatsoever to the filibuster. So forget all the things they've said in the past about various reforms that they're in favor of. I know, they're on the record. They're in favor of those things. It doesn't matter. They're not going to allow their shield to even be chipped away at. So no voting rights, no anything that would require the Senate's participation. They are against it. Really fast though, Francesca, I do wanna just touch base with, and I don't know who that anchor was, and this is not about him. It's been all over mainstream media. It is not that he is wrong that this is a setback for the Democrats, but is that the most important group to identify as having been set back by this? Like, yes, politically it's not great for them, but it's not great for America, for the voters, for our democracy. But to say that is to imply things and opine about what's been going on in terms of voter suppression. And I think a lot of like straight news shows don't want to even stray a millimeter from their objectivity and identify that the Republicans are clearly at war with our democracy.
No, yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, and also not only that, it ices people out from engaging in a conversation about what's going on in DC, right? It's like, well, the Democrats have scored and they're lost a couple points. I mean, it's just a game. It's a horse and a dog and pony show, a horse race, and you only cover that aspect. You're not actually covering what will this mean for you in your state. You might have to wait longer to vote. You might not get a mail-in ballot. That will directly affect issues that are happening in your counties, in your homes, in your communities. No. We don't talk about anything of that. We don't talk about the importance of voting rights. Like, why not just give us a little flashback about how hard it was to even get all Americans the right to vote. But no. It's looking bad for the Dems. And yeah, it is a cynical and contextual-less, context-free way to talk about this.
100%. Yeah, it's safe, and that's fine. Again, that's not the biggest issue here. The biggest issue is all of the other issues that we will not have progress on because of Manchin, Sinema, and also obviously the Republicans. Do we need to acknowledge that none of them were going to sign on to this? That was obvious to us, even if Joe Manchin pretended all last year that it wasn't obvious to him. By the way, credit to BC Trumpet in the Twitch chat, who says, I was in so much suspense trying to figure out who the two were. But actually, that raises an interesting point. Very briefly, only two voted against the proposed rules change. Do we believe that only two were actually against it, or were they, as usual, the only two? Saying brave enough, that doesn't seem right. I would say just transparent enough, obvious enough to vote against it. Or were there in fact others, whether it's Carper, Tester, Shaheen, or whoever, that also, if Manchin and Sinema weren't there, or if they changed their mind or whatever, as if they have a mind to change, would we have instead had Carper and Tester? Those would have been the two. What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's a really good question. I mean, obviously, I think what this proves is that the vote was taken, even though Democrats knew, Chuck Schumer knew he's been failing at his job, and that Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin have only further dug in their heels. And guess what? They like the negative press. They like all this shine. They love being, sort of having the whole world, the nation wait on bated breath for them to curtsy and say, no, screw the working class, right? So we knew that. So it's amazing to me that we're still taking these votes. And I get it, maybe you need to grandstand a little, you gotta, make your points out there. Cory Booker's gotta stand up, Sheldon Whitehouse gotta talk about dark money, which I think is great. But at the same time, these are people who are beyond shame. They're so soaked in corporate money, it doesn't matter. They love it. And what's crazy to me, you're talking about running cover, is that don't you realize this is not the Build Back Better Act? This is voting rights. These are your voters. This is supposedly your base. This is the base that gave you this razor thin majority in the Senate in the first place. And now you're going to deliberately undermine what actually brought you into power in the first place? It boggles my mind. And again, are you paid to lose, or does losing just give you an advantage?
Mm-hmm. I think the issue is that they are paid, and they don't much care. Some of them just want to stay for a long time. That's their career path. I want to be here forever. Manchin doesn't care. Manchin probably could beat off a primary challenge. And if not, he'd just run for governor. And if not, he'd just be a coal millionaire. Sinema thinks she's going to run for president. Like, they don't even care if they lose. We have been stripped of every possible ramification for them. A lot of good stuff being revealed about our system now. Anyway, I want to give you some, we're going to jump into a video in just a sec. I want to give you some reactions to what happened, because there were some good ones and some attempts, by the way, beforehand to get through to them. So let's jump into this video from Bernie Sanders.
But this I do not understand. I can understand Republicans, but this I do not understand. I do not understand why two Democrats who presumably understand the importance of the Freedom to Vote Act, and as I understand it, will vote for the Freedom to Vote Act, are not prepared to change the rules so that that bill could actually become law. That I do not understand. If you think this bill makes sense, and if you're worried about the future of American democracy, and if you are prepared to vote for the bill, then why are you wasting everybody's time and not voting for the rule change that allows us to pass the bill? You know, it's like inviting somebody to lunch, putting out a great spread, and saying you can't eat.
It's a very Bernie Sanders analogy there.
Yes.
And I like what he said, although you could say, is it helpful? But Bernie Sanders, he was great, he was fiery, he's right to call them out. Is it helpful to have him delivering a powerful message that is about how he doesn't understand it when the reasoning behind it is there? Would it not be better to, I understand he's a senator and Bernie Sanders will call out people more than a lot of people, but even he has a limit. He's not going to say they are fundamentally corrupt. They do not give a damn about any of their constituents. They're independently wealthy and likely to become more wealthy. They don't care about any of this. Every word they say is a lie. I think that that is true, but Bernie Sanders clearly is not going to say that on the floor of the Senate.
No, and I think we've talked about this exact thing before. You know, I commend Bernie for going up there. You know, obviously forgot the comb, love it. Old Bernie just getting mad, yelling. You got all the spreads, you got the whole different kinds of mustards, and you know I love mustard, but I can't eat it. How dare you? You know, I love that. But I just feel like he really likes mustard. But you're right that like, if and when either Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden call out and actually talk about some of the moneyed interests, you know, whether it's the business lobbies in behind the scenes with Kyrsten Sinema trying to get her, to, you know, like the National Retail Business Association, whatever the hell it was, trying to get her to tank the BBB, you know, whether it's coal companies and Joe Manchin, there is a fear. There is this invisible line that they will not cross because they are afraid. I don't think Sanders is afraid of himself getting his, you know, finances checked up on because the guy's pretty much an open book. I think he's afraid that he will lose some of those other senators that you've been talking about who are maybe being sort of on the fence. And yeah, they take corporate donations. And yeah, they take fossil fuel donations. And yeah, they're kind of worried about the climate stuff and the BBB and whatever, whatever. You know, obviously this is not the BBB, this is voting rights. It is different. But you're right that once they start to finger, you know, Manchin and Sinema for those specific donors and donations, you know, all bets are off and they may lose or they're afraid of losing other Democrats. I understand the political calculation. I don't agree with it.
Yeah, I agree. I think we understand that. I want to give you just two more responses to what happened. One, a good one. One. Oh, prepare for your blood to boil. But the first good, Cori Bush says, the legacy of Jim Crow is alive and well in 2022. That's all I have to say right now about Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and Senate Republicans. I agree. Obviously, we have to say more. It's our obligation and my only monetizable skill. But I agree with her. It is fundamentally that simple. Now, the second is reporter Allison Pecorin says, asked Senator Kyrsten Sinema as she left the floor after casting her vote against changing the Senate rules what she thinks the next steps on voting rights are. Have a nice night, she said.
Oh, it's a good thing that we are way more reasonable than the other side.
Is that better or worse than the thumbs down to keep you impoverished for the rest of your life despite working multiple jobs? I will leave that up to individual audience members to decide, but.
Yeah, we've said nothing about.
Her step is F around and she is effing around.
Oh my God, go sell your like Hot Topic brand for women in their 50s. Just go sell your like weird makeup line that with, go away, go build a brand, sell your supplements. We don't want you in the Senate anymore. But I will say, you know, I'm not sure we're gonna talk about this, but probably the most telling clip from the entire vote yesterday and the fact that no Republican voted to enshrine and support the right to vote, the most basic right in a democracy, was Mitch McConnell, who was explicitly asked not Just basically, what do you say to your own constituents who are voters of color who are worried about their access to the ballot? And he's like, well, that is an unfounded worry because African-Americans, whatever his disgusting droopy face is, he's like, African-Americans, which that wasn't necessarily the question, voted the same rates as white. No, he didn't say, excuse me, as Americans. African-Americans voted the same rate as Americans. That's all you need to know. Why are we even talking about critical race theory? Mitch McConnell is his own walking critical race theory petri dish, saying that basically there's a distinction between Americans and African Americans. Thanks, buddy. Like, this is stuff that, you know, all kinds of, you know, black leaders throughout the, you know, civil rights, black power struggles, you know, Toni Morrison talked about this. Malcolm X has talked about this, that white Americans do not see black Americans as American, period. That's why there's hyphens, Asian Americans, African Americans, you gotta have a hyphen. That's all you need to know.
I agree. Well, unfortunately, that is not the only frustration we have for you, because Joe Biden gave a press conference yesterday and they talked about a number of different topics, including the future of Build Back Better, which doesn't have one. But hey, I like to play hypothetical games. Let's pretend that there's a path forward. You're not going to like it. Here's Joe Biden.
It's clear to me that that we're going to have to probably break it up. I think it's clear that we would be able to get support for the $500+ billion for energy and the environmental issues that are there. I know that the two people who've opposed, on the Democratic side at least, support a number of the things that are in there. For example, Joe Manchin strongly supports early education, 3 and 4 years of age. So I think we can break the package up, get as much as we can now, and come back and fight for the rest later.
Okay, so they want to break it up and do multiple bills. Okay, so they can't all be through reconciliation because the Senate parliamentarian, who is literally more powerful than Thanos, will not allow that. They got one extra thing. It was supposed to be Build Back Better. So we're gonna break it into multiple things, Francesca, that can each individually be filibustered. He knows this, right? Joe Manchin's really into some of this stuff. So surely Joe Manchin will sign on. And that brings us not an inch closer to breaking the filibuster and individual components of this that we weren't able to on some sort of big bill that cuts across all of the priorities. What was the point of what he just said there, other than to waste our time and frustrate leftists?
To frustrate not just leftists, but you know, everyone. You know, I think that even people who voted for Joe Biden enthusiastically instead of holding their nose and realizing it was the only option, you know, understanding that like, moderation and like centrism cannot cut it in a time of massive inequality, massive wage theft, and neo-fascism. It just will not do. And this is not the guy who's going to stop those things. He needs to do better than this. Number one, as you're saying, it is impossible to pass multiple reconciliation bills. So that's out of there. And then in what world, in what Senate are any of the other proposals not going to be filibustered? That was the point of passing it through the Reconciliation Act. So listen, buddy, just abolish federal student debt. Just mobilize the National Defense Production Act to get people healthcare and home care and masks and tests more than the ones you just mobilize it so we can have hospital workers and nurses and address this crisis now. Just give us another check. Come on, do something, but you're not working through Congress. I'm sorry.
It's hashtag Biden do anything challenge. We've had it up for a long time. He's not going to. He was asked at that press conference about student loan debt, about his individual specific pledge to cancel $10,000. And he ignored the question. He didn't actually answer it, except that he kind of did, just not with words. We all understand where he's at. But they're gonna break it up into different pieces or whatever. And by the way, remember, they break it up into these different pieces and it has no chance of passing because it'll be filibustered. But again, remember, why does it need to be broken up? Not because of the filibuster, Well, sure, it would have been filibustered if they tried to pass it that way. But because Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, again, wouldn't pass it. Again.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read a few graphics from the New York Times. They're going to be really frustrating because it reflects insanity on the part of Joe Biden and the New York Times. So they say, the sweeping climate change and social policy bill passed the House, but came to a halt last month when Joe Manchin, the West Virginia Democrat and swing vote in the Senate, said he opposed it. Okay, that's true. However, Mr. Manchin has suggested that he might back various climate provisions in the legislation, leading some Democrats to say the party should regroup around a climate bill. So again, it'll just be filibustered. And more importantly, of all of the individual parts of that bill that Joe Manchin would support, we're supposed to believe it's the climate stuff that he's going to go for. They continue. That could mean jettisoning many of the childcare, healthcare, and tax reform provisions that are priorities for different segments of the Democratic coalition. We begin to understand why they're doing this. It's not about passing a little bit because it won't. It's about not even trying again to pass the bigger parts that he would never allow. Mm-hmm. So he will imply, hey, maybe there are some Republicans that'll sign on to like carbon capture or something. Well, the New York Times asked each of the 50 Senate Republicans if they would support just the climate provisions and Build Back Better if they were presented in a standalone bill. None said they would. Not one, not two, certainly not 10. So again, this is a massive waste of our time. And in particular, it's because you're dealing with people like this. This is Senator Chuck Grassley, I'm gonna read a quote about, but it could just as well be Joe Manchin. He refers to himself as the father of the wind energy production tax credit. He said he could support provisions in the bill that bolster wind and solar power, but is opposed to sections that would help make electric vehicles more affordable. That would hurt his state's ethanol industry. Yeah, it's hate to set the world on fire, but we can't damage Iowa's ethanol industry in the short term. None of the Republicans said that they felt we were facing a planetary emergency, which it's easy to not feel like you're facing if you just don't look up. Jessica, thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, the real thing here is sort of what we talked about when we looked at how the news, mainstream media often reports on these, you know, the Voting Rights Act, for example, or, you know, or the, you know, the, yes, like the Freedom to Vote Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill that failed in the Senate, which is the idea that this is just a points game. And that is how Republicans view this. Even if they believed in wind and solar, there is no world in which they're going to give Joe Biden a win on anything. Their tactic is the same as it was under Barack Obama, which is, you know, completely like obstruct, obstruct, obstruct. That's it. That is their goal, and then get into power, and then pass more tax breaks for the rich. That's it, and it kind of works thanks to the filibuster. So we can't get anything done unless we get filibuster reform and or primary the hell out of these people and get them out, or do things by executive action. But we mistaken and we constantly report on these developments of who would do what and when, as if the Republican Party were operating in good faith, and they are not operating in good faith.
Yep, no. And if you ever somehow got 10 Republicans on something, which you literally never will, then some other Democratic senator would step up to tank the entire thing. Okay, heads up to the director. Don't jump ahead. We're gonna go to these following videos, but we do need to take our first break first. It's just too much, it's too good in that it's too bad. So we're gonna take a break, read some of your comments, but don't go anywhere. We got more good stuff coming up after this. Unfortunately, the break went somewhere. I'm back though. Hello everybody. Let's jump into some more videos. Now, Biden's agenda has just gone poof. As if, you know, a purple titan snapped his fingers, it's gone. And it's gone because of two things. Obviously, you know, unified Republican opposition to literally anything that he might do. Like if he ordered seconds at breakfast, they'd be against it. But also, of course, Manchin and Sinema and the other supposed centrists. They have set fire to his presidency. A presidency he has worked more than half his life to get is gone because of them. But that will not stop him from taking shots in the immediate wake of them setting it on fire against not them, but against the left. Take a look at this video.
Why are you trying so hard in your first year to pull the country so far to the left?
Well, I'm not. I don't know what you consider to be too far to the left. If, in fact, we're talking about making sure that we had the money for COVID, making sure we had the money to put together the bipartisan infrastructure, making sure we were able to provide for those things that, in fact, would significantly reduce the burden on working class people, but make them, they have to continue to work hard. I don't know how that is pulling it to the left. If you may recall, you guys have been trying to convince me that I am Bernie Sanders. I'm not. I like him, but I'm not Bernie Sanders. I'm not a socialist. I'm a mainstream Democrat, and I have been. And mainstream Democrats have overwhelmed me. If you notice, the 48 of the 50 Democrats supported me in the Senate on virtually everything I've asked.
Again, like, okay, I'm a little bit more mad at the reporter for that insane question. But again, like, I'm not Bernie Sanders. I'm not a socialist. Like, he is pitching it as an extreme when the extreme, as you will go on to define, clearly is the two that went against the president and 48 senators and have stopped you from doing literally anything. Like, can you show at least 10% of the disdain for those people, the mainstream moderate Democrats, at least in the eyes of the media, as you do for Bernie Sanders? It's just so needless to take shots at him when he supports your agenda more than you do.
He's fought for your agenda more than you do. Don't worry, Joe Biden. We know every day, we know you are certainly not Bernie Sanders, because Bernie Sanders would have a much better response to the idea that somehow helping working people is far to the left, that voting rights is far to the left. Bernie Sanders wouldn't actually argue on a far right talking point like you just got handed there. Bernie would have moved on from that question. Bernie would have actually fought for the people and for voting rights, and would have actually hammered Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin instead of rolling out the red carpet for them in the Oval Office. Bernie Sanders would have had much more of a spine in this moment than you do. So stop showing disunity for your party by throwing your budget chair under the bus. What are you doing? Be a president.
You've seen them your whole life on TV. Just act like, well, actually, I would prefer if you not act like most of them, but you've seen some good ones in TV and films. Act like those. But anyway, this is the game of the media. I mean, you saw in that question, why are you being so divisive and trying to pass legislation that the vast majority of Americans want? But it's not just them. Take a look at this question. Ron Klain is going to be asked by Joe Scarborough.
Moderation is selling in the Democratic Party. So why is it that it seems time and time again, the president has overreached, moved too far left, and has not been able to bring those final two senators home?
Well, first of all, I think the president is right in the middle of where the country is. You look at what's in our Build Back Better plan, bringing down the cost of childcare. I think that's a very moderate thing for families. Reducing the cost of prescription drugs, saying you shouldn't have to pay more than $35 for insulin. I think that's an all-American mainstream proposal.
So I don't particularly care about the Ron Klain stuff, but like, again, why hasn't he done enough to get Manchin and Sinema? Biden has not had a meal without one or both of them being at the table in 8 months. He spends every minute trying to court them. He is willing to give them literally anything. They're not playing ball, not because they haven't been wooed enough, but because they're fundamentally corrupt. And that is a ridiculous part of what he said. But he started off, Francesca, with moderates are selling. Well, selling out, yes, but the idea that, wait, what, that like people like them more? That it's strategically working for the Democrats? I honestly am not even sure what point he was trying to make there.
No, I mean, and that's the whole thing with with Joe Scarborough and Morning Joe and a lot of these like Republican lights that are passed off as somehow Democrats or progressive or like, you know, pro-democracy even on channels like MSNBC. I'm sorry, Scarborough is completely out of touch with the American people. And I hate that people watch that show and they somehow think, yeah, moderation is selling. That's, you could steal that out of Kyrsten Sinema's mouth. She's been using the exact same line of thinking to defend keeping the filibuster in place to shut down voting rights, to shut down the Build Back Better Act, to tank this moderate president's agenda. So what are you even talking about? I mean, kudos to Ron Klain for attempting to answer it, but I hate the way this mainstream media is so stacked in favor of the status quo that is killing us.
Yeah. I feel like, can we have, I don't know, some sort of federal regulation for media where you can have millionaires as hosts and all that. It has to say in front of them at all points, millionaire. Imagine if people watching the news like turned on CNN and all day they were reminded that every single one of these people yapping at them is a millionaire at the very least. Yeah.
It reminds me,
like, they know on some level, but I do not think that they think about it. Like, and honestly, if there's a single person that gets brought on that is earning minimum wage, then show that. Show that you're finally putting the spotlight on the working class. I would love to see that. You will go months on CNN and MSNBC without seeing a single person like that.
Yeah, yeah. There definitely should be. It should be like a, if you guys ever remember the VH1's pop-up video, you know, but for like how much people make who are on TV and how much they're worth.
Hold on. I mean, I feel like that's news broke right there. You gotta make that pop-up MSNBC. Oh, that would be great. Show their investments, show who they partied with.
Yep.
Yeah, they're not our friends.
No, there's no more news broke right now, John. It's Bituation Room, baby. That's my podcast. Everybody listen to it, please.
Saying that's your past. You did stuff like that. You can still do stuff like that.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway, RIP. Okay, with that, let's move on to other things. You could do yoga during it if you want to. I'm saying it. Anyway, with that, let's jump into some other stuff. Not the best week of news for Donald Trump and his inner and outer circle of cronies and goons this week. So few bits of updates on January 6th and all of that that we want to give you. One is that the Supreme Court has, I think once again, for like the 10th time, rejected a request that was put in by the former president to block the release of White House records that might shed light on what was going on and in the run up to January 6th. The order, which cast aside Trump's request to stop the House Select Committee, the January 6th Commission, we call it colloquially, from obtaining the records while the case makes its way through the courts, means that more than 700 documents that could shed light on the attack can be transferred to Congress. I'm assuming he doesn't want them to have access to read any documents that he himself has not read, and he has certainly not read any of those 700. Trump's defeat in court also allows the select committee to obtain from the National Archives some of the most sensitive White House records from his administration, including call logs. That is potentially interesting. Oof. Daily presidential diaries. Please let me see those. And handwritten notes and memos from his top aides. So again, like, I really do feel like they have done this many times at this point, but he keeps trying to stop it, Francesca. And as of right now, the committee is going to get access to some of those documents.
Here's the question. How many Diet Cokes did he order within the span of 4 hours while he was watching the insurrection unfold and laughing giddily? Did it go down his nose and he had to, like, you know, he was coughing for a while and he was like, get me a napkin, like that, you know, what did, that's what I imagine happening. Here's the thing, Mr. Trumpy. You are not a private citizen when you're the president. Yeah. Everything you do is on behalf of the American people, obviously, supposedly. I mean, your presidency was not like that. And so we have records of that. But your paper shredders cannot stop that. It's already been done. We've done recorded you. Now it's just about, you know, listening to it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and hopefully maybe eventually having testimony from literally any of these people. They apparently are not going to comply. And so far it seems like a strategy that the Dems are perfectly willing to let play out. But another update, more have been subpoenaed from the Trump circle. So 2 days ago, we found out that Rudy Giuliani and other members of what is called his legal team, I'm not sure if that's an accurate description of what was being brought to the table, but they have been subpoenaed. So it's him, he's his personal lawyer. You also have Jenna Ellis, who is famous for two things. One, drafting a memo on how Mr. Trump could invalidate the election results by exploiting an obscure law. The other is getting COVID from a Rudy Giuliani fart. You also have Sidney Powell, a lawyer who worked on many of the lawsuits with Mr. Giuliani. Ran an organization that raised millions of dollars based on fake claims that election machines were rigged and is legitimately one of the craziest people in America. Boris Epstein pursued allegations of election fraud in Nevada and Arizona and is said to have participated in a call with Mr. Trump on the morning of January 6th. So all of those people who are like part actual lawyers for the president, part graphic novel characters at this point are being subpoenaed. Although will almost certainly not testify unless they're facing very serious legal consequences that will probably not come because this is the Democrats. Let's remember.
John, do you obviously study political science? Does this, what point do they just get dragged out? You know, and we see like Sidney Powell, the sort of Yeti in a Talbot's outfit being just like squawking and thrashing.
Well, generally, look, there's some great research has been done on this and how long it takes to drag a Yeti out. But no, like so, in theory, they could put the force of law behind these subpoenas. That is possible, and I believe that they did with Steve Bannon. What feels like 2 months ago now, and there hasn't really been updates on. They can do that. Stephen Miller, remember, was really dancing around a question on Laura Ingraham about whether he would comply.
Right.
Like this sort of thing can happen. This is much more of a legal question than a poli-sci question, but
okay.
We're going to have to see. It's really and there was reporting earlier this week that a lot of the Democrats on the panel feel like, well, I mean, we want to do a good job, but like what about if the Republicans get in office, then they might come at us. They're gonna anyway. That's like, well, what if they call us socialists? They're gonna anyway.
But they
might not pursue this because of that fear.
Can you imagine if a Republican won the White House again, just how much they would sick the entire, I mean, the Department of Justice would be no more. It'd be just like, you know, the Department of Law and Order, you know, and it and that's it. It would be sort of manned by, I don't know, raccoons or something. I know they're cute, but like they'd be fascist. But yeah, they tried to do that during the Trump presidency as well, which is just going after the people for going after you. Trying to hold accountable anyone trying to hold you accountable. It's just like this never ending, like who's on first echo chamber of accountability. But yeah, you're right. I think Steve Bannon turned himself in because it seemed like some sort of knock down the door and drag him out situation was imminent. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I would really like to see Rudy Giuliani. I mean, I wouldn't because I feel like he wouldn't have had time to put on his pants and then be a whole thing. He'd be like, I was tucking in my shirt. Anyway, there's.
Yeah, okay, well, look, you were wrong about one thing. It's some sort of raccoon predisposition to fascism. Dog Brain Cat Scan says, raccoons are freaking anarcho-socialists and I won't hear anything else. Based on their compliance with trash can regulations, I would say yes, much more anarchists than fascists. But anyway.
You want me to talk about dogs? You know it would be dogs, let's be real.
Maybe. They're just following orders.
All the time.
They just wanted to be called.
Just following orders, yeah, woof, woof, heard it all before. All right.
Anyway, you sounded so much like Cecily Strong there. That was weird. Maybe it was dogs that made me think of it. Anyway, okay, so we're gonna take our second break. When we come back though, Henry Cuellar in the news, very much for not the reasons he'd like to be, and more after this. Okay, Franny, let's cover some interesting developments. Henry Cuellar is a Democrat for the most part from Texas in the House who narrowly beat out a primary challenge last time around from Jessica Cisneros. Well, he's being challenged once again. This time though, it's not just a primary, which is also there. It's also apparently something to do with the FBI because the FBI conducted what it described as court authorized law enforcement activity at the Laredo home of Henry Cuellar just yesterday. Agents were also present at his downtown campaign office in Laredo. They put out a statement not saying much, but saying the FBI was present in the vicinity of Windridge Drive and Estate Drive in Laredo conducting court authorized law enforcement activity. The FBI cannot provide further comment on an ongoing investigation, which is too bad because I want to know. Anyway, his office put out a statement too saying, Congressman Cuellar will fully cooperate in any investigation. He is committed to ensuring that justice and the law are upheld. Anyway, agents worked into the night. At one point, an agent walked in carrying a bag of ice and cases of soda. So fun little party going on. Others grabbed snacks and took them inside. By around 7:30 p.m., a group of agents loaded large bags, plastic bins, and a computer into a federal vehicle. Some agents appeared to be logging the items. Around the same time, totally coincidentally, has nothing to do with it, Henry Cuellar's campaign manager deactivated his Twitter account. I don't have any answers as to what is actually going on. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe he got death threats, although why would they take his computer then? Anything is possible. We have no idea, Francesca, but what do you think?
Okay, here's what I think. South Texas, we're talking drugs, all right? They're talking a lot of drugs. We're talking a big old party. FBI brings drinks, they bring snacks, they're in on the party. His campaign manager tweets out a photo of them all partying together with, again, said illicit drugs. And then that goes, is starts to get some traction. And then it's like, uh-oh, we gotta delete that and your entire account and you're out of the thing. And we're gonna cover it up.
I don't have a more plausible explanation than the episode of Breaking Bad that you just described.
Yes.
Are they rebooting it? They reboot everything.
In real life. I don't know what is going on, but if it has something to do with rat effing Jessica Cisneros and her campaign, then I want justice.
I would guess, and this is based off of absolutely nothing, this is not even an allegation, but I mean, there's a lot of Democrats that I wouldn't put above getting bribes and things like that, especially during difficult primaries. We don't know. We have no idea. We'll have to see. We do have two more things to let you know. One is just a fun little note. Steny Hoyer chose yesterday to endorse Henry Cuellar before the FBI raid. Oops. Oh. Whoopsie. Anyway, and again, maybe it'll turn out to be nothing. But great political instincts there, Steny Hoyer. And then finally, you might think, well, look, he is facing a primary challenge. Perhaps Jessica Cisneros will have weighed in. She didn't, except that she kind of did. She tweeted, been getting a lot of new followers tonight. Welcome. My name is Jessica Cisneros, and I'm running for Congress because South Texas deserves a representative who will fight for our dreams as hard as we do. Hashtag TX28. I don't know why she would be getting so much more attention today. She doesn't know either. It's just something. But anyway, she has been on the Damage Report recently. That interview is live, as well as past appearances. So feel free to check our channel on YouTube and you can watch those. Any other thoughts, Francesca?
No, I am very eager to know what this is all about. And the FBI, okay, I'm sure, will be transparent about it and tell us.
Definitely. You get to choose. We get a resolution to Henry Cuellar's FBI case or the case against Matt Gaetz. Which do you choose?
I gotta go with Matt Gaetz. I'm sorry, I really need that.
No.
I mean, yeah, I don't wanna know, we'll obviously. Who wants to know those details? But
that's true. Oh God, wait, please. Let these cases be connected, please. Yeah. Anyway, please let him have been partying with Matt Gaetz. Anyway, okay, with that, we have time for one more story. Although I will remind you, when we take our hour long break at the end of the hour, and then we come back, we're gonna be joined by two students engaging in a voting rights centered hunger strike in DC. So you're definitely gonna wanna see that. But before that, let's jump into this. I think we have a video.
Shut down the economy. I'm not going to shut down the country. I'm going to shut down the virus.
All right, there you go. He didn't shut down the virus. And now we're learning the vaccines aren't working for this latest variant.
Okay, that is a show, Fox and Friends, that has millions of daily viewers. And what she just said, and will experience very little pushback for, and certainly no actual repercussions, is 100% wrong. It would be fair to say that it is having more difficult in comparison to previous variants. It is so fundamentally and purposefully dishonest to say that it's not working on this variant. As of right now, vaccinated people overall have reduced their risk of hospitalization 13 times over and reduced the risk of death 14 times over unvaccinated people. If you want to say that it is distressing or disappointing that you can still get COVID in comparison to previous ones, which were a little bit harder to have breakthrough cases, that is fine. But to say they're not working when fundamentally the most important way that they could work is to stop you from going to an early grave is so irresponsible. And they'll just move on with their fun, casual morning show.
I thought thoughts it wasn't real. I thought COVID was overblown and it wasn't really a big deal. And everyone's just, you know, it's a cold and you survive it, it's fine. Oh my gosh. So what if your uncle died? Like I since when do they care? Since when do they care that he promised he would wipe out the virus and then he didn't? But also, here's my honest opinion. Biden should have never said that kind of stuff about the pandemic. Yeah, here's an unprecedented once in a lifetime global pandemic and I'm gonna wipe it out. No. And the fact that he's doubled down only on the vaccine, which is absolutely something that needs to be promoted in every which way, but is not, say, you know, mandating or allowing for hazard pay or paid time off to get that vaccine, or imploring all the different ways that we can support people to get vaccinated and to take the days off if they need to take a day off from whatever kinds of, you know, side effects that they might feel. Like, so again, I hate how arrogant Biden has been about the vaccine and about the COVID and somehow getting it under control and so kind of pretending that, yeah, man, you put all your eggs in the vaccine basket and it hasn't worked out. And there are breakthrough cases and absolutely it prevents against severe hospitalization and death. But you need a broader strategy. You need a public health strategy. It can't just be about this one thing.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think along the way, you can acknowledge that we warned about this. We warned about creating a worldwide petri dish that new variants could spring up from that'll either be more deadly like Delta was or more transmissible and more able to evade vaccine protection like Omicron. We said this. But again, yes, you can't stick with we're just gonna do vaccination. And look, they're sending out tests finally, begrudgingly. They're gonna send out masks finally. On maybe the 2-year anniversary of the pandemic, we'll finally get masks sent to us by the government. That's cool. Great success there by the government. But anyway, do not listen to the hype. And we had people, you know, not only claiming that the vaccine didn't matter, that was proven by Omicron, so irresponsible and not just on the right. We had people saying that Omicron's not so bad, so pandemic's over. That's how we greeted the new year was, oh good that Omicron is here because it's not serious, you don't have to take it seriously. Yeah, go tell that to a hospital right now. And people are once again, we're losing 2,000 people a day again after the pandemic is over. That was gut felled and again, not just people on the right claiming that.
And so ask them what they watch on what their favorite show is. And it's gonna be Fox and Friends. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I hope that, you know, Ainsley Earhart, whatever the hell her name is, you know, woman who somehow dates Sean Hannity. I hope that I mean, is she donating to hospitals? Is she gonna go help out? Why don't you get on the front lines and help all the people that you misled as they're sick and dying and on ventilators right now?
Yeah. So again, it helps a ton. Two more important points though to add on to this. One is CDC released new data just yesterday about the effect of the different vaccines. They say Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine provided the most robust protection against Delta infections. Pfizer's came in second best and J&J trailed both of them according to a large study of more than 1.1 million adults conducted between May and November of last year in New York and California. That's largely in line with what we've heard before. That was before boosters, by the way. So again, get your booster, especially if like me, you had J&J, which doesn't provide as much protection. The other is you've been told potentially if you watch right wing media that COVID's bad or whatever, but the vaccine's much worse. I mean, look at the VAERS database after all. Well, new claim, you are 200 times more likely to die from taking aspirin than from COVID vaccine. That's according to Nathan Grell's health physician in the University of Melbourne. So yes, any medicine can have side effects, including many of the medicines that you take literally every day and you do not like break down American society over. Anyway, that is all the time we have for our first hour, but we do have more stories to get to after the break, and we'll be joined live Skype interview with some awesome activists. We're going to be talking about voting rights, what happened last night, and their hunger strike. All that is coming up in just a little bit. So if you're on Twitch or on YouTube, don't go anywhere except maybe briefly to get coffee, a sandwich, something like that. But we'll be back here in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.